Imagine this. A single really important protein in your brain, one you absolutely need, suddenly goes, well, rogue, it misfolds. And then it doesn't just stop there. It actually convinces its healthy neighbors to misfold too, setting off this devastating chain reaction.
Exactly, a cascade effect.
But here's the really mind-bending part. What if that exact same rogue protein could show up in incredibly different ways, leading to diseases that, on the surface, look totally distinct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so today we're diving deep into that. It's a fascinating, complex area. We're exploring what's called the prion-like hypothesis. Now, this is inspired by true prions, but it's different. And it has huge implications for understanding conditions like Parkinson's disease.
It really does.
Our sources for this deep dive are pretty comprehensive, everything from detailed lecture notes to really in-depth explanations of the molecular nuts and bolts.
Yeah, lots to unpack.
And our mission today is simple. Pull out the absolute must-know insights for you, especially as you're navigating the, let's face it, complex world of neuroscience. We'll see how ideas from really rare infectious diseases are totally reshaping how we think about much more common ones.
That's right.
And we're going to zero in on one protein in particular, alpha-synuclein.
Yeah, alpha-synuclein is key. And what's really, I think, revolutionary here is how this single idea protein misfolding and its ability to self-propagate it just unlocks so many doors, you know, across different diseases.
Right.
It's a fundamental shift, really, in how we view neurodegeneration.
Yeah.
We're moving beyond thinking only about infections from outside, like viruses or bacteria, and seeing how a protein itself can cause all this trouble.
That's a great way to put it. So that foundation, it really starts with those original troublemakers, the true prions. What was it about them that was so groundbreaking, proving a protein alone could be infectious?
Well, it completely changed the game.
Yeah.
Because unlike, you know, a flu virus or a bacterial infection, these diseases weren't caused by something with its own DNA or RNA.
Yeah.
They're driven entirely by a misfolded protein.
Just the protein.
Just the protein. The main actor is the prion protein, usually called PRP. Normally it's fine. It's healthy. That's PRPC. It is. It's a certain shape, mostly alpha helical.
Okay.
But in prion diseases, it refolds into a pathological form, PRPSC, which is rich in beta sheets.
Yeah.
And this PRPSC form is bad news. It's toxic. The brain's usual cleanup systems can't easily get rid of it. And crucially, it's self-propagating.
Meaning it recruits the good guys.
Exactly. It finds normal PRPC molecules and forces them to adopt its own misfolded, dangerous shape. It's like a really bad influence spreading through the protein population, a domino effect.
And the result of all these misfolded proteins piling up.
Well, they aggregate, they clump together, they spread, and they cause what we call spongiform degeneration. If you look at the brain tissue under a microscope, you see these tiny holes like a sponge. Plus, you get significant neuron loss and gliosis. That's basically the brain forming scar tissue in response to the damage.
So what were those classic diseases in people and animals that first alerted scientists to this bizarre mechanism?
Well, in humans, you have Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or CJD, and also Kuru. In animals, probably the most famous is bovine spongiform encephalopathy, BSE, or mad cow disease.
Right.
And also scrapie, which affects sheep. They have different names, affect different species, but the underlying biology, that misbehaving PRP protein, is the same core problem.
And mad cow disease. I mean, that really hit the headlines, didn't it? The crisis in the late 90s.
Oh, absolutely. That epidemic in cattle in Europe was alarming, with severe neurological symptoms. But the real terror came when it jumped species.
To humans?
Yes, through contaminated beef. It caused what's called variant CJD in people, a truly frightening demonstration of the infectious potential of these misfolded proteins. It wasn't just a disease within an animal. It could cross over.
And even before that, there was Kuru.
Right, Kuru. A really tragic story, but scientifically pivotal. It affected the four people in Papua New Guinea.
How did it spread?
Through ritualistic cannibalism, specifically consumption of brain tissue. It was the first human prion disease identified and the first proof, really, that a protein alone could act as an infectious agent.
No virus, no bacteria needed.
Exactly. And when the practice stopped, the disease incidence plummeted. It was stark evidence and laid the foundation for, well, all of modern prion biology.
Okay, so what we learned from these rare kind of terrifying prion diseases, that knowledge then started to reshape how we look at other much more common neurodegenerative conditions.
Precisely. That's where the prion-like concept comes in. The core idea is similar. A normal protein in the brain adopts an abnormal shape. It seeds further aggregation of that protein, and then the pathology spreads, often along connected neural pathways.
So the basic steps inside the brain sound familiar. Misfold, seed, aggregate damage.
Exactly. These misfolded clumps act like seeds. They recruit normal, healthy versions of the same protein and convert them. And this problem isn't contained to one cell. It seems to spread from cell to cell.
Okay, but, and you flagged this earlier, there's an absolutely critical difference here when we talk about prion versus prion-like.
Yes, infectivity between individuals.
Right. True prions, like the ones causing CJD or BSE, can, under certain circumstances, transmit from one person or animal to another, contaminated surgical tools, tissue transplants, eating contaminated meat.
Correct. That potential for transmission between individuals is a defining feature of true prion diseases.
But for these other proteins we're now calling prion-like, like alpha-synuclein in Parkinson's or maybe tau and amyloid beta in Alzheimer's, TDP-43 in ALS, that's not the case.
That is not the case. And this is incredibly important. These proteins, like alpha-synuclein, spread within the patient's brain from cell to cell, but they do not spread between people in any normal circumstances.
So you can't catch Parkinson's from someone who has it?
No, absolutely not. The propagation is contained within the individual's nervous system. This distinction is vital for public health and, frankly, for reducing unnecessary fear.
Okay, so if it's spreading within the brain, how does that actually work? How does the problem jump from one neuron to the next?
Well, the thinking is that neurons containing these misfolded aggregates can release small seeds, maybe tiny fragments or individual misfolded proteins, into the space between cells.
The extracellular space.
Exactly. Then neighboring neurons, healthy ones, can take up these seeds, often through a process called endocytosis, where the cell membrane kind of engulfs stuff from outside.
Okay.
Once inside that new, previously healthy neuron, the seed finds the normal version of the protein and starts the conversion process all over again. It corrupts the normal protein in that cell,
creating a new batch of misfolded protein.
Right. And then that cell might release seeds and so on. It creates this domino effect, spreading along connected brain circuits.
And this model helps explain how the diseases progress.
Very much so. Think about Parkinson's. Often the earliest non-motor symptoms, like loss of smell or constipation, might appear years before the classic motor symptoms. This could reflect the pathology, starting in areas like the olfactory bulb or the gut's nervous system, and then spreading towards the midbrain areas that control movement.
Like the substantia nigra.
Exactly. Or in Alzheimer's, maybe subtle memory issues start as the pathology is more confined to regions like the hippocampus, and then as it spreads to wider cortical areas, you see more global cognitive decline. The prion-like spread offers a mechanism for this anatomical progression of symptoms.
It's a powerful explanatory framework. It makes sense of that slow, creeping progression, and it also underlines why these diseases are just so tough to diagnose early and even harder to treat, right, compared to an infection where you might have an antibiotic or antiviral.
Absolutely. You're fighting a corrupted version of the body's own proteins, not an external invader. That makes targeting it specifically without causing side effects incredibly challenging.
Okay, which brings us squarely to the protein we wanted to focus on today. Alpha-synuclein. This is one you, as neuroscience students, will definitely encounter again and again. It's central to a whole group of diseases called synucleinopathies.
Yes, alpha-synuclein is the common thread. It's the protein that misfolds and aggregates in Parkinson's disease, in dementia with Lewy bodies, DLB, in multiple system atrophy, MSA, and also in Parkinson's disease dementia, PDD.
So it's spread in Parkinson's. You mentioned the break staging model. Can you elaborate a bit on that predictable pattern?
Sure. So the break hypothesis suggests that in many Parkinson's cases, the earliest signs of alpha-synuclein aggregation, these clumps called Lewy bodies, might actually start outside the brain proper, maybe in the nerves of the gut or in the olfactory bulb, the part of the brain responsible for smell.
Which would line up with those early non-motor symptoms.
Exactly. Loss of smell, constipation, things that can predate the tremors or stiffness by years, even decades sometimes. Okay. Then the model proposes the pathology spreads upwards into the brainstem and then crucially into the midbrain, hitting the substantia nigra.
And that's where the dopamine-producing neurons are lost, causing the motor symptoms.
That's the classic link. Bradykinesia, slowness of movement, rigidity, tremor. As the disease progresses further, in later stages, the pathology can extend into higher cortical regions.
Leading to cognitive issues.
Yes, potentially leading to cognitive decline, dementia, emotional disturbances. This relatively predictable anatomical march of the pathology really lends strong support to this idea of prion-like propagation along neural networks.
Okay, but here's the big question then. If it's the same protein, alpha-synuclein, causing the trouble in Parkinson's, DLB, MSA, Why do these diseases look so different clinically? The symptoms, the progression rate, they can be vastly different.
That is the crucial question, and it's where things get really interesting. The answer seems to lie in two main things. First, where in the brain the alpha-synuclein aggregates are primarily causing damage, and second, which specific types of brain cells are most affected.
Okay, location and cell type.
Right. So in Parkinson's disease, as we said, the major hit is to the dopaminergic neurons in the substantia nigra. That dominates the clinical picture with motor symptoms.
That sucks.
But in dementia, with Lewy bodies, while there might be some Parkinsonism, the alpha-synuclein aggregates are much more widespread, especially in the cortex and limbic system areas involved in thinking, memory, emotion, perception.
Explaining the dementia, the hallucinations, the fluctuations.
Precisely. The cognitive and psychiatric symptoms are often much more prominent early on in DLB compared to typical Parkinson's.
And MSA, multiple system atrophy.
MSA is different again. A key feature there is that the alpha-synuclein aggregates are found predominantly inside oligodendrocytes.
Glial cells, not neurons primarily.
Right. These are the support cells that produce myelin, the insulation around nerve fibers.
Mm.
So hitting the oligodendrocytes leads to a different pattern of damage, often causing severe autonomic failure problems with blood pressure, bladder control, and different, often more rapidly progressing motor symptoms like ataxia or severe Parkinsonism.
Fascinating. And Parkinson's disease, dementia.
That's typically seen as starting like classic Parkinson's, with the motor symptoms driven by substantia nigra damage. But then over time, the pathology spreads more extensively into the cortex, leading to a progressive cognitive decline on top of the motor symptoms.
So the same protein, alpha-synuclein, but where it aggregates and which cells it hits dictates whether you get Parkinson's, DLB, or MSA.
Essentially, yes. Location, 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 and cell type vulnerability.
But wait, it gets even more complicated, doesn't it? I've been reading about how it's not just where it clumps, but how it clumps. This idea of alpha-synuclein strains.
Ah, yes. That's really the cutting edge right now. And it adds another layer of complexity, but also potential understanding. The idea is that even though the basic alpha-synuclein protein sequence is the same.
Chemically identical.
Yes. It can misfold and aggregate into different structural shapes or conformations. Think of it like origami. You can fold the same piece of paper into many different shapes. These different aggregate structures are what we're calling strains.
So different 3D structures of the same misfolded protein.
Exactly. And these different structures seem to behave differently. They might propagate at different speeds, be more or less toxic, or have a preference for different cell types or brain regions.
How are scientists figuring this out, seeing these different shapes?
A major tool is cryo-electron microscopy, cryo-EM. It's incredibly powerful. It allows researchers to freeze samples of these protein aggregates and visualize their structure at near atomic resolution.
So you can literally see the different ways alpha-synuclein is folded in aggregates from, say, a Parkinson's brain versus an MSA brain.
That's the goal. And the evidence is mounting that distinct structural fingerprints or strains are associated with different synucleinopathies. For example, the structure of alpha-synuclein fibrils extracted from MSA brains looks different from those extracted from Parkinson's or DLB brains.
And this could explain even more of the clinical diversity, like why some people with Parkinson's progress rapidly and others slowly.
Precisely. It might be related to the specific strain of alpha-synuclein they happen to have. Different strains could mean different disease trajectories, different symptom profiles, and potentially even different responses to future therapies.
So the big take-home message here is that understanding this strain diversity is absolutely critical if we want to get towards, like, precision medicine for these diseases.
Absolutely. It suggests that maybe a treatment design based on one type of alpha-synuclein aggregate might not work as well for another structural variant. We might need strain-specific therapies.
This isn't just, you know, interesting science in a lab. For you, heading into neuroscience research or clinical practice, this concept of strains has massive diagnostic and therapeutic implications.
Huge implications, especially for diagnostics. One of the really exciting developments is that we're finding misfolded alpha-synuclein, not just deep in the brain, but also in more accessible places.
Like where?
Cerebrospinal fluid, for sure, but also potentially in blood, saliva, urine, even in peripheral tissues like skin biopsies or biopsies from the gut or the appendix.
Meaning we might not need a brain biopsy or wait for severe symptoms to detect it?
Exactly. It opens the door for minimally invasive testing, potentially much earlier in the disease process.
And are there specific tests being developed?
Yes. One of the most promising techniques is called RTQI-HI. That stands for real-time quaking-induced conversion.
Okay, bring that down. RTQI-HI.
So basically, you take a sample from the patient, say cerebrospinal fluid. You add it to a mixture containing lots of normal recombinant alpha-synuclein protein. Then you shake it vigorously. That's the quaking part.
Okay.
If there are any misfolded seeds of alpha-synuclein in the patient's sample, it will start converting the normal protein you added into the misfolded aggregated form. The shaking dramatically speeds this up.
And you can watch this happen.
Yes, you monitor it in real time using fluorescent dyes that bind to the aggregates as they form. So if you see the fluorescence signal go up, it tells you that misfolded seeds were present in the original sample.
Wow. And is it sensitive? Can it pick up tiny amounts?
Incredibly sensitive and also very specific. It's already showing great promise in research settings and even some clinical labs for detecting misfolded alpha-synuclein in Parkinson's and DLB, and also for detecting misfolded PRP in prion diseases like CJD.
So the potential here is massive. Early diagnosis, tracking disease progression, maybe even identifying specific strains eventually.
All of the above. Earlier diagnosis is key. Better ways to monitor if treatments are working by seeing if they reduce the seeding activity. And yes, potentially stratifying patients for clinical trials based on their specific type of alpha-synuclein pathology. There are other techniques too, like similar amplification assays using cryo-EM to get those structural blueprints, mass spectrometry to look for chemical modifications on the protein. It's a rapidly evolving field.
We're moving away from just diagnosing based on symptoms late in the game towards finding biological markers potentially much earlier.
That's the hope, towards minimally invasive early detection, which is crucial for.
Yeah.
Getting treatment started before too much irreversible brain damage has occurred, making these strain distinctions potentially incredibly powerful.
Exactly. So, just to hammer home that point, not all alpha-synuclein aggregates are created equal. These structural variants, these strains, they seem to drive the clinical differences we see between diseases and even between patients with the same diagnosis. It really underscores the need for personalized approaches.
Okay, so let's recap. We started this deep dive looking at the really weird biology of prions, understood the profound lesson they taught us about protein misfolding as an infectious principle, and then we saw how that basic framework, the prion-like idea, helps us make sense of these much more common, complex neurodegenerative diseases, specifically the synucleinopathies.
The really big revelation, I think, is this idea that alpha-synuclein forms these distinct strains. That's a potential game changer. It helps explain the diversity we see in the clinic, and it's opening up totally new avenues for targeted diagnostics and hopefully targeted therapies.
It's not just which protein misfolds anymore.
No. It's also how it misfolds, its specific structure, and where it causes trouble in the brain. Those details matter immensely.
So for you, as future neuroscientists, getting your heads around this prion-like hypothesis and the really nuanced world of alpha-synuclein strains, it's vital. It's absolutely fundamental for advancing the field, both in the lab and in the clinic.
Definitely.
It really drives home why a simple one-size-fits-all treatment approach is probably not going to cut it for these conditions.
Which leads to a final thought, maybe something provocative for you to consider.
Right.
If we get to the point where we can precisely map the specific alpha-synuclein strain or combination of strains in each individual patient, perhaps very early on,
Yeah.
what new frontiers might that unlock? Not just for treating symptoms, but potentially for interventions that could slow progression or maybe even one day prevent the disease from taking hold in the first place.
A really profound question, and it highlights just how dynamic and exciting this area of neuroscience is right now. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive today.
Thank you.
We really encourage you to keep questioning, keep exploring this critical and rapidly evolving field.